tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Here we are a week before the GMC 400, and Colin Ford, I know that you're getting ready for it, but I have serious concerns, and this coming from not only my opinion, but the Princess, Heidi.
Uh-huh.
She even has serious concerns. The last street race that we attended was this little, you know, backwater event called Le Mans.
Yep.
That was, in fact, the first street race that the Princess had ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remembering that Bathurst is also a street race,
yep,
but she's never been there. The track is 4 and 4.5 lanes wide, and these race sports cars on them. The track at Canberra, I put my Hyundai XL on the, like, I centred my Hyundai XL on the white dots in the marking the centre lane of the road. I was following a Falcon. I don't reckon the Falcon could have got past me staying on the centre of the white dots, let alone me trying to get past the Falcon if he was doing the same thing. Thus my concern, thus Heidi's concern, that we are not going to see any passing unless we are seeing cars into the fence.
Or people running out of brakes, going up escape roads or similar. And that's one of the things that I think we'll find this year's first event of the GMC 400 is that they'll probably make do with the narrow track this year. But between now and next year, watch your bed, a lot of the central dividing strips along a lot of the roads will go, and they'll be sealed up and temporary sort of planter boxes or whatever put in for the rest of the year, and then when it comes time for the race, they'll pull them out and create like 3, 3.5 lane wide racetracks.
Well, we're definitely going to need it, because as I said, I could put a Hyundai XL. If I put the Hyundai XL on the pole position, got the jump at the start, if I was to hug the centre line, I believe that I would not get past.
And I think you'd have everybody else trying to push you off the track at every corner you come to.
But this is it, and they talk about the V8 supercars. I can't watch it. It is too boring. A Formula One race has more excitement and more passing in at the moment. Let's go to the news first up. I think that might be the safest bet at this point of time. Look, Formula One champion Michael Schumacher, the current points leader, he is the winner of 4 of season 2000's first 6 races. And he looks like he's setting sail for another victory after taking pole position for today's Monaco Grand Prix. Rusty Wallace will start from pole position for the third time in 5 NASCAR Winston Cup Series races this weekend at Dover, Delaware, the Dover Downs Speedway. He led first and second round qualifying. Well, shoot, I better check that, because I know he led first round qualifying. And in fact, he did lead second round qualifying as well, to see himself in front of Bill Elliott starting on the front row. And anyone that doesn't think that Ray Everingham is not doing anything this season is very, very much mistaken. I will tell you that now, because Bill Elliott has come from the boonies in the McDonald's 94 Ford, soon to be Dodge, and has really taken it up to everyone this season. Although Awesome Bill from Dawsonville having a lot of engine problems, which put him out of the 600 last weekend. In fact, congratulations to Matt Kenseth, who took the win at the Coca-Cola 600. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. Road racing news, and there's plenty of it, in the final shakedown for a few drivers before Le Mans. Didier Taze and Maurel Baldi lead the second day qualifiers at Mid Ohio, but the Duran Lister teammate will start from the middle of the 41 sports car grid. In the NHRA, Corey McLeffin recorded the quickest pass of the season in a top fueler, 4.547 seconds, to earn the number one qualifier honours for the eliminations coming up in the Prestone Route 66 Nationals at Joliet, Illinois. And other top qualifiers, John Force in front of car, who's hoping to break Bob Glidden's all-time win record of 85, along with Ron Kirshner in Pro Stock, Bob Pinella in Pro Stock Truck, and Matt Hines in Pro Stock Motorcycle. In Bush Racing News, the 200, the NBNA Platinum 200 at Dover Downs was taken out by Jason Keller. He took a page out of Mark Martin's playbook when he was chasing down the veteran Winston Cup Series driver to take the lead with 43 laps left, and then holding him off to win his first NASCAR Busch Grand National race of the season. Mark Martin now has finished second in 2 Busch Grand National races. He has won 4 and DNF'd in 1. So a pretty impressive record, and you see a lot of going away tours. Mark Martin is in fact in the middle of a say goodbye to Bush Grand National, and the one thing you normally don't see in a farewell season, Colin, is a win. But Mark Martin already with 4 and 2 seconds, so not a bad effort from seven or eight starts. I can't remember what it
is. The best way to go out is to go out on a high.
Yeah, that's it. In IHRA news now, Paul Ramone leads the field as the top qualifier at the Mopar Canadian Nationals. Now, the performances during the first round of qualifying at the Mopar Parts Canadian Nationals show that the Grand Bend Motorplex track has teeth. The track saw its first 300 miles per hour run and elapsed times that threaten the record books. This is the first year the IHRA have returned to Canada in the last 20 years. And in Winston Cup news, we'll go to it now. As we said, Nat Kenseth has fresh off his first ever NASCAR Winston Cup Series win last weekend at the Coca-Cola Speedway, Coca-Cola 600 at Lowe's Motor Speedway. He led the second round qualifiers in the 400 at Dover Downs this weekend. For Australians over at the World of Outlaws, they ran at Eldora Speedway last weekend, last night. Mark Kinzer and Steve Kinzer, followed by Jeff Shepherd, Dale Blaney and Jack Hortenschild, round out the five. Brooke Tatnall finishing back in 21st spot after coming through the B main and is doing a great job over there. We might mention that Bourne and Bates took out wins in the Super Series in the Australian Rally Championship from the Rally of Queensland earlier this afternoon.
Yes, and last weekend it was the British Touring Car Championship at Alton Park in Cheshire, and it was Alain Mignot who scored Ford's 500th victory in the British Touring Car Championship in round 9, and it was a new man, Honda's Tom Christensen, who claimed his first British Touring Car Championship win in round 10. Both drivers showed how important pole position was as they led each race from start to finish. Mignot, who finished 6th in round 10, remains at the head of the championship with his Ford teammate Anthony Reid just 7 points behind. Ford's Rickard Rydell and Vauxhall's Jason Plateau are tied in 3rd, with Matt Neal winning both rounds for the Michelin Cup for Independence in his Team Dynamics Max Power Racing in Nissan Primera, with James Kay winning Class B in his Barwell Motorsport Honda Accord in both races. So after 10 of 24 rounds, the British Touring Car Championship sees Alain Mignot leading championship on 100 points from Anthony Reid on 93, Rickard Rydell on 79, Jason Plateau in the first of the Vauxhalls in 79, Ivan Muller on 78, Gabriel Tarquini on 57, Tom Christensen on 50, Vincent Rayemaker on 43, Matt Neal on 32, James Thompson languishing in 10th on 26 points after his bad accident, which caused him to miss a couple of rounds, Colin Blair 11th on 20 points, and David Leslie, who made a guest appearance, on 5 points in 12th. So that's where we're currently sitting with the British Touring Car Championship.
All right. So last weekend, of course, was the greatest spectacle in motor racing. And Juan Montoya might have had an R for rookie next to his name, but at the Indy 500, he proved he was far from an open-wheel racing novice by winning the 84th running of this great event. Montoya was the first rookie to win the Indianapolis 500 since Graham Hill triumphed in 1966. At an average speed of 167.607 miles an hour, the number 9 Target Chip Ganassi Racing G-Force Oldsmobile Firestone had the wood on the rest of the competition. Montoya led 3 times throughout the race, and it is a rookie record. In fact, Billy Holland set the previous record of 143 laps in 1947. Montoya led 167. Buddy Lazier finished second, and Eliseo Salazar finished in 3rd position. For those of you who didn't get to see the race, we go to the Indianapolis Radio Network for their coverage of the finish.
So Bob Levy, the Indy 500. Yeah, his target is right on target. Coming through for Juan Montoya. Heads for the checkered flag. Call the finish. My game team may be a rookie, but he is for real. Flashbulbs capture the finish as Juan Montoya wins the 84th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race.
Yes, Montoya doing it in great style. His teammate Jimmy Vassar was also in with a chance until pit stops. became the order of the day late in the race. Vasser had to pull off the track to get more fuel and really hand it over to Montoya, who couldn't quite, well, and who had Lazier on his tail, but Lazier couldn't quite keep him in the end. And it was a very, very interesting race. For those who were looking forward to pole sitter, Greg Ray managed to beat Lazier in qualifying. Well, he finished 33rd and knocked the exit of turn two wall down quite severely. After the race, of course, the kart team winning the event was something that we were all waiting to see how both sides of the kart IRL battles took it. And I think basically a fairly even spread of congratulations. No one sort of denigrating any of the IRL teams that I caught on any of the news services and reports that I've come across. Now, for Bob Anderson and Lee Kunzman, the team managers for the 1 and 2 finishes in the Indianapolis 500 on Saturday, they agreed totally that the race was won by Juan Montoya in the pit and not on the racetrack. The rookie Montoya beat the 1996 Indianapolis 500 winner Buddy Lazier to the checkered flag by 7.184 seconds. We were quicker on the average lap speed than he was, Kuzman said, who was looking after Buddy Lazier, but their pit stops are phenomenal. Ours were good, but theirs was phenomenal. The amazing thing about the pit stops, though, was the day before, both Vasser and Montoya's teams had been at Nazareth, Pennsylvania, running in the kart race there, and the team had woeful pit stops, Colin. They weren't even in the hunt.
Well, this is how quickly things can change around, where you go from having a bad day to a good day, I suppose. In the case of the team, they did the right thing and came out when firing when they needed to, and to win the big race for Juan Pablo Montoya.
Yeah.
And of course, the latest news is he's back to Williams next year. Apparently, Frank Williams will be paying Chip Ganassi the $5 million US dollars payout on the contract. Jenson Button, bye-bye Button, at the end of the season, he'll be heading off somewhere else.
To Jaguar is the latest
word. That's the latest word to replace Johnny Herbert. So no doubt that win that he had in Indianapolis helped seal the deal with Sir Frank Williams and co. And, of course, bounces back and gets the pole at Milwaukee as well.
Yeah, it's been a big week for Juan Pablo Montoya, and it just keeps getting bigger. The target, Chip Ganassi racer, who, I might add, Chip Ganassi said on the race weekend at the conclusion of the race that he was the greatest open-wheel racing driver in the world. And there is no better driver, so that was quite an interesting tip. But Montoya in victory lane was reported to have said it's nice to finally have a win because the Toyota engines have been letting them down quite a bit. But as I said, the Chip Ganassi driver is on his third pole for the year, the Toyota having plenty of power, not over the complete race distance. This time at Milwaukee, it was 177.769 miles per hour, and he will start on the front row on the Sunday, Miller Lite 225. And I don't know why it's 225. It always used to be a 200-mile race. And we might just try and catch up with a few thoughts from Juan Pablo Montoya.
I think it was really good. You know, I'm really happy, you know, to be here running for the target team again in Milwaukee. You know, it's good. You know, it's hard. That was good. A bit too loose, but this is fast, so be alright. Oh yeah, I definitely did. You know, I had to be very careful. But, like, I was fast enough, you know, and we needed it from this morning. We had a good shot at the ball and we got it. Oh, I hope so. You know, we've been so fast everywhere, you know. In Nathalie, even some laps, I was, you know, to save some fuel, I wasn't even going full throttle. And just everything went wrong. Oh, it's been crazy, you know, being in New York and done all kinds of stuff. And, you know, for us, it's really hard to come in here because we test here and, you know, when it came this pile up, something broke in the transmission, then next day it rained. So we didn't have, you know, a very good setup to come here. Yesterday we drove, even like 10 minutes to go from the end of practice. Yesterday we said, you know, just park it. You got to figure out some, you know, to go with something else to make it better. And the car was just awesome today.
So Montoya will now go from the pole, hoping to get a bit of a winning streak going for the target Chip Ganassi team. Starting outside him was the man who was dogging him all last season to the end, who was Dario Franchitti, but another one of these drivers that just has not had a lick of luck so far this season.
Thank you. Yeah, it's nice to be on the front, the sharp end of the grid. Kind of like old times, the one to an eye out there. We worked really hard on the car. We had a good car yesterday morning, straight off the truck. Yesterday afternoon, just things started getting very loose. We had to go back to the drawing board last night with it. We came out with a good car this morning. And we continued right through qualifying with that. I mean, I might have made a little bit more of a lap, but, you know, it took a while for the tires to come in. So I did the first lap. It was just an extra sort of warm-up lap, if you like. I'm really going for it on the second lap. So, you know, it's all about the race here tomorrow. Even we have been working very well together. You know, both guys have been giving good feedback, and we've been using that to get to the front together. And you know, I think we're second and fifth now, which is pretty good. We're pretty happy with that. I think the guys at Team Code Green did a great job, and it's nice to see the green cars on the up near the front again. It's nice to be up there. You know, as I said, the car for the race, you know, it's very important to have a good, consistent car. But at least we're up there fighting. We don't have to come from 17th or somewhere. We're starting at the front, and that should help us a lot, I hope, tomorrow.
And Patrick Carpentier, he is in fact the track record holder at Milwaukee, and of course Milwaukee, fantastic track, but there are also a lot of concerns that they might not be able to do the passing that they want to do. But Carpentier, happy to be in third place.
It was pretty close, you know. I think we can, if we do our things perfectly, I think we can pull another 10th out of it if it's not too hot this afternoon. But I pushed hard, you know, I think like everybody. But we have a good car. We could do 20.9 twice, and with fairly the same lap. So I'm confident we're going to do 20.9 again, but I want to go to 20.8. I think we can do it. I think pole's important everywhere, but I don't think that's true about the Hanford wing, because look at Paul won some races from 19, and most of the guys that won the races so far hasn't been the guy that that was necessarily on pole. So I think I'd be happy to get the pole, but the most important thing is the race, and I think we can pass outside in 3 and 4. Seems to be a very good place to do so, so we'll see. I'm pretty happy to be back. The team, Flair's team, with the Ford engine, they give me such a good car and good equipment. We had a good car at the Homestead. We've been unlucky, and unlucky at Nazareth, but I think this weekend it's going to change. We'll prove that the team is good and they have a good car.
Yeah, Patrick Carpentier starting from position number 3. And Montoya, and, well, as I said, Dario Franchitti sharing that front row, and it is going to be good to see if both those drivers can keep it towards the end of the race, how much both of them have learnt over a 12-month period.
Well, that's right. They were saying that Franchitti had brought his lucky charm with him to the track in the form of his girlfriend, Ashley Judd, and both of them now back in good health. Apparently, they both had suffered broken bones and the like from various accidents over time, and with the return of Ashley Judd, things looking better for Dario, obviously probably settling down a bit. But there's heading back here to Australia, there's one young...
We've got one more thing. We're going to do something before that, Colin.
Okay.
Dixon. Dixon has won Milwaukee from pole to pad in the Dayton Lights, Dayton Indy Lights points lead. The second-year driver, Scott Dixon, in the PacWest Lola, padded his Dayton Indy Lights championship lead by a point on Saturday when he won the pole, and also he's getting set for the 100-lap race at the Milwaukee Mile. Dixon, 19, lapped the 1.032, so that probably explains why it's 225 miles now, at an average speed of 154.961 miles per hour to score his second career pole, and the young talent won his first pole last year at Chicago, where he went on to lead every lap for his first Indy Lights win. Dixon earned his second victory in the 2000 season opening race at Long Beach in April and left California leading the championship. His nearest rival, Jason Bright, finished second at Long Beach and runs second in the championship points race after qualifying second in Milwaukee on Saturday. Bright toured the Milwaukee track at an average speed of 154.427 miles per hour, which was good enough for the pole position until Dixon took it away in the very last run of the section. Dixon now has 21 points, 5 ahead of Bright's teammate Casey Mears, who equaled his career best finishing effort by taking third on the grid at an average speed of 154.54 miles per hour. Dixon's teammate Tony Renner, Mario Dominguez, I can't pronounce those bloody Mexican names to save my life, Chris Meninga, Jeff Simmons, Townsend Bell, Johnny Kane, and Philippe Gaffone complete the top 10, which is separated by less than 0.6 of a second. Now, sorry, Colin.
No worries. Yes, and talking of racing, you're moving much closer to home. Next weekend in Canberra, as well as the V8 supercars, we've got the Formula Holdens, the GDPs, the historic touring cars, and the GT Nations Cup. Now, one young man who's driving the car that is currently leading the GT Nations Cup is Mark Noski, driving the Ferrari 360 Modena Challenge, and he's a young man who's got a lot of talent, has come up through the Young Lions team with HRT, etc., and his news in this year just keeps getting better and better. We had the chance to talk to Mark recently, and we asked him about driving that incredible Ferrari 360 Modena.
It's quite a fantastic car to drive, actually. It's relatively easy on my behalf. I don't have a clutch or a gear lever as such. I've got gears on the steering wheel, the same as the Formula One cars, ABS brakes, and the balance of the car is a very neutral car. We've never really had a lot of oversteer or a lot of understeer with it, so it's really just a pleasure of a car to drive.
Mm. Now, as you mentioned, it doesn't have a normal gear change. It has the paddles as per Formula One?
Yeah, that's right. It's as I said, we don't have a clutch, which is a bit of our Achilles heel on our starts, because we don't have a device to launch the car off the line. We don't make the best of starts, but it's certainly a lot easier when you're cornering and needing to change gears, where you only have to flick the pedal on the steering wheel and you can keep both hands on the steering wheel. So it's quite a unique car with that type of a gearbox.
Mm. Yeah, the Ferrari 360 Modena Challenge is a new car onto the GDP scene here in Australia, and it's, I believe, created specifically for this Nations Cup type of racing that's around the world.
Yeah, well, apparently they're racing a series, a 360 Challenge series in America at the moment, and they're also racing a 360 Challenge series in Europe. So this car was specifically built for this category and this style of racing, superseding the 355 Challenge, which they used to run last year. And I mean, it's just an incredible car. I really can't say enough about the car. It's a fantastic car, and the fact that it's a Ferrari just really makes it even more pleasurable to drive.
No doubt, you probably get the Tifosi up on the hills at the various racetracks you go to cheering you along.
Yeah, well, it's actually quite funny, because we're at Adelaide and for the Clipsal 500, and the amount of people that were coming around the car was incredible, and there's certainly a lot of Italians coming over and having a look at the car, and they've got all their Italian clothing on, and it's quite funny seeing that at a V8 supercar meeting, so it's really good to see.
Mm. Now, in terms, you mentioned that, you know, the Achilles heel of the car is the fact that it doesn't have a clutch, so it's a bit hard to launch off the line. What do you reckon is the car's greatest strengths?
I'd probably say the braking capabilities of the car I think are far superior than the other cars in the category, which is our main competition is obviously the Lamborghini and the Porsche at this stage. We've got a pretty good, the car at the rear of the car is quite good, and it looks after the rear tyres quite well, and we haven't even touched the front end of the car yet, so I think its biggest aspect is the rear of the car is so good on tyres, and we've got such a good braking advantage.
Do you think that's probably one of the advantages of having like a mid-engine car as the Ferrari is?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Jimmy Richards is, his car's really, I mean, he's in the Porsche, and his tyres really start going off after about three or four laps, where our car really stays quite consistent. So I'd say that because it is a mid-engine car, that is quite a benefit to us. The Lamborghini also has its rear tyres go off quite badly, and they're both rear-engine cars. So I think that is a major advantage with the mid-engine car.
Mm. As you mentioned, the two chief opponents you have in the series are the Lamborghini Diablo of Paul Stoeckle, which I think has got, from my experience of seeing it at Eastern Creek, a lot of mumbo in a straight line. But then you've got the wily old man of motorsport himself, Jim Richards, in that Porsche. So it's a case of there's plenty of competition there to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's actually quite a competitive series. It's you've got Jimmy Richards, who's certainly no slouch, and Jim's is still as hard to pass as anyone else I've ever tried to pass. And obviously, Paul Stoeckle's got quite a good track record with three Gold Star Championships, and he's certainly no slouch of a driver, and there's a lot of other good drivers like Jeff Morgan, who's in a Viper. There's a lot of other Porsche guys who are really starting to find their feet. I mean, you can never underestimate Peter Fitzgerald, who's in the other Porsche. And it's a great category, and I'm really enjoying it this year. It's a lot of fun, and it's not as stressful as the V8 supercars which I drove last year, so I'm just having a really good time this year.
Mm. Now, as you say, there's lots of new cars. There's actually a lot of cars involved in the GDP Nations Cup. I noticed that coming up soon, they've got the new Brabham Honda NSX coming up, which will probably be another car that, once it finds its feet, gets going, it'll give you a bit more competition. And so, obviously, it's one of those things where you've got to really capitalise on every race you go to.
Well, that's right. I mean, we were fortunate enough. We actually got our car quite late, and obviously it was quite a well-sorted car because they've done quite a lot of testing in Europe. And obviously the Porsche of Jim's is quite a sorted car, and obviously the Lamborghini is quite well-sorted. So the three of us have got into the series with a sorted car, and we've been able to gain points from the race one of the championship, whereas a lot of the other cars, like the Vipers, and now you've got the Brabham Honda. There's also some Mercedes-Benz, I think, coming into it, and a couple of Nissan Skylines. So by the end of the series, I think you'll see a lot more than just the three cars up the front of the field. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time to develop these cars, and hopefully by the end of the year, there'll be a really good battle going on at the front with a lot of manufacturers.
Mm. Now, the title name of the team, of course, is Prancing Horse Racing, and I believe that's based around a Ferrari dealership down in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's correct. It's owned by Tony Raftus and Mark Coffey, who started the business about 18 months ago, I think. And they sell second-hand Ferraris, and their business name is Prancing Horse Automobiles. And they decided to run the Ferrari 360 in the GTP this year and contracted me to drive it. So, I mean, it's just a great tool for their business as well, running the Ferrari race car.
Mm. Now, looking back over your own achievements in the past, I've sort of got the old driver profile out here. Now, I know you've been around for quite some years. I've sort of seen you pop up in Formula Ford since 92. You've made a number of appearances there. You owned the production car championship, third outright Eastern Creek 12-hour production car race with in the Porsche 911 RSCS. Now, I remember that because I went and covered that race meeting.
Yep.
You've done the Australian Endurance Car events. You did Gibson Motorsport in 96. I think you teamed up with Tony Scott for a ninth overall at Bathurst.
That was Gary Walden.
Yeah, Gary Walden, that's right.
Yep.
Tony was tied up with John Clellan that year, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember that far back, to be honest.
Yeah, oh, there you go. You've done US Formula Ford. You've done the Australian Formula Holden Drives Championship. Been a member of the Holden Young Lions racing team. You've done your Indy Lights testing. Now, I believe the biggest thing coming up is this one that we've heard about, the possibility of you getting behind the wheel of the Panos for the Race of the Millennium down in Adelaide at the end of the year.
Yeah, well, that was quite an amazing story. That we met Don Panos at Adelaide for the Clipsal 500 on the Saturday. And obviously, being that sort of event coming to Australia, we, like, I think a lot of the other drivers in Australia, have queried about rides in that series. And Tony Raftus and Mark Coffey were talking to Don on my behalf, and by Sunday afternoon Don had said, look, we'll offer you a test, and if you go well enough in the test, we'll give you a drive in the Race of 1,000 Years. So I'm heading over in August to test that car at Road Atlanta, so that should be just a phenomenal experience.
Mm. Of course, the thing is, you're joining some people with Australian background as well, in terms of one of the Brabham boys who's been driving that Panos, and as we've seen, it's a pretty awesome weapon.
Yeah, I've seen the regs on it, and it's got 800 horsepower and got 600 horsepower and weighs 800 kilos, so it's going to be quite a quick car, and it's certainly going to be a lot quicker than anything I've ever driven. So the unique thing about that car is you sit over the rear axles, and speaking to Don, he said that it's a car that gives the driver an incredible feel of the car's balance, so that's something that's going to be unique that I've never driven before, and I'm certainly looking forward to driving that car.
Mm. Well, look, we wish you all the best for that test drive when you get it in August. But the other thing is, the next time we're going to see you with the GDP Nations Cup is for the first race on the new Canberra Street Circuit. Have you had an opportunity to sort of look at the circuit personally, or have you only seen the diagrams and maps of the circuit as it's laid out?
No, I've actually only seen the track map, and a couple of the guys I know have actually been up there out of the V8 supercar ranks, and they've walked around it and taken quite a look, and they said it's going to be a very narrow circuit. So I think that should be a fantastic event. If it's anything like the Clipsal 500 that they run in Adelaide, it'll be just been a phenomenal event, and I'm certainly looking forward to that race. And obviously it's going to be a race where you can't afford to crash the car with the concrete walls there, and hopefully we can come up there and hopefully get a win and get extend our championship lead on Jimmy Richards.
That's right, because you are currently leading the championship. Now, no doubt, we'll be talking to you when you're here for the GMC 400, the GDP Nations Cup races that will be running in support of that event.
Yep.
And we'll hopefully you'll have a good weekend. And as I say, all the best for the test in August. Mark Noske, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, Mark Noske, a very nice young man. And of course, things have even got better for Mark with the news in the last week that he will head off to Italy shortly to test an ex-Michael Schumacher Ferrari Formula One car. Noske will drive the Japanese Grand Prix winning car over 3 days at Ferrari's own Fiorano circuit, as well as the Mugello track before the 1997 model machine is flown to Australia for demonstration duties. Recently purchased by Prancing Horse Automobiles, the Ferrari F310B is currently being restored to its original specifications by the Formula One team's engineers and mechanics. So it's the car that Michael Schumacher drove for the last four races of the 1997 Grand Prix season, and was driven to victory at Suzuka in Japan by Schumacher, and it's the last of the wide track full slick Ferraris. So things for Mark Noske, he's going to be getting behind the wheel of that thing as well. He would have to be, I reckon, one of the luckiest young guys around. If he can tie up that Pinoz deal as well, he will be, I think he'll be taking weeks to get the smile off his face. So good luck to him there. But jumping back to Ferrari again, and as mentioned earlier, the Monaco Grand Prix and the grid, the full grid for the Monaco Grand Prix taking place later tonight, our time. Michael Schumacher sits on pole position, with, interestingly enough, Jarno Trulli in Jordan sitting next to him. Next row of the grid is David Coulthard and McLaren, ahead of Heinz Harald Frentzen in the second of the Jordans. Normally, Jordans do not do very well at Monaco. Eddie Jordan would be grinning from ear to ear. Ahead of Mika Häkkinen, who sits fifth on the grid, is McLaren. Ahead of Rubens Barrichello and Ferrari, John Alesi in the Prost. There, another man who's been linked to the race of the millennium, potentially driving one of the BMW Schnitzer cars for the Prost. Giancarlo Fisichella in Benetton, Ralf Schumacher in the Williams, Eddie Irvine in 10th position in the Jaguar, probably one of the better starting positions for them sometime. Johnny Herbert, 11th in the Jaguar, ahead of Alexander Wurz in the Benetton, Mika Salo in the Sauber, Jenson Button languishing down in 4th place in the Williams F1, Jos Verstappen and Pedro de la Rosa in Arrows in 15th and 16th places on the grid, Jacques Villeneuve, a lowly 17th place on the grid in the BAR, Nick Heidfeld in the Prost, 18th, Pedro Diniz in the Sauber, 19th, Ricardo Zonta, 20th in the bar, then Marc Jean and Gaston Mazzacane in the two Minardis, 21 and 22.
Are they still calling them Minardis, or has the sale to Telefonica gone through?
They're still Minardis, and the talk is that it may not go to Telefonica, it may go to Audi.
Okay, then.
It gets better and better, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Now, in the Formula 3000 race there yesterday, in fact, I will read to you, and I apologise for this in advance, the entire press release, but I have just gotten off the phone with Ann Neal, who is Mark Webber's manager, and Mark is okay. Now, I'll preface this in that by reading the press release to tell you why I tell you this. Junquera has won in Monaco, the Brazilian winning his third consecutive race. Bruno Junquera has won the FIA Formula 3000 Championship, taking victory around the streets of Monaco. Britain's Jamie Davis was second, and pole sitter David Salins overcame a first lap incident to take third position. The Brazilian led every lap after the first corner, no surprise there, when the front row men of David Salinas and Sebastian Budaris contrived to collide, Budaris attempting to take his Gallus Jr. Lola around the outside of Salins' similar supernova car at the Sete Devot corner in the move that was clearly destined to end in catastrophe. Sure enough, they clattered the nose section off one of the cars, bounced into retirement. Salins, however, was able to retake his line and lost only a place to Junquera. Jamie Davis lost places to Junquera, Davis and Sarrazin. He was later to take a further place when Sarrazin's McLaren Jr. car ran wide at Portier on lap 5. Sarrazin then ran by Ricardo Maurizio when trying to retake his line. Such is the track of Monaco. If you've got that one as well, so you're watching me read this, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. The Frenchman was out on the spot and clearly was livid. But Maurizio was able to limp on in a highly damaged Red Bull Junior car until the shattered suspension got the better of him half a lap later. Sellens was able to continue, but without the pace. And the leading pair, who were stretching away, equally, the following cars could not overcome the slim gap he was able to pull out. So Eric Bernatoli and Mark Webber were left tussle amongst themselves for the ensuing laps. Even a safety car period late in the race could not alter his position to any great degree. Lap traffic stood between him and Davis on the restart, while Webber, who was following, had not closed the gap sufficiently, even giving the slower pace car, or the slower pace under the safety car, to capitalise. It was consummate, if luck-boosted, performance by Schumacher. The Williams Formula One test driver stroked away from the start, building a gap in second place, Jamie Davis, over the period of laps. The Englishman never had the pace to challenge his rivals in any serious terms. By lap 40, the distance between the two cars had stabilised to around 6 seconds. The safety car, brought out for several crash cars on lap 32, threatened to destroy all of Junquera's hard work. And the gap to Davies was cut at a stroke, and with a lottery of a restart, posed new problems. However, the Petrodis junior driver was able to get the jump on Davis' Ford Tech car, and as the safety car pulled in, from there on in, the gap was held at 2 seconds or so. Behind the leading two, however, the race was all action. Characteristically for Monaco, there was a precious little overtaking on the track, but a good deal of driver errors and mechanical problems to make sure the order wasn't set in stone until the final lap was complete. One of the few attempts to pass outright was Nordic's Justin Wilson, who executed a bold dive down the inside of Frank Montagne's car on the Grand Hotel hairpin on lap 28 for 8th place. Sadly for Wilson, the cards would not fall right for him on the restart, and Montagne was snatched the place back in the confusion. And despite not having given up until the flag had dropped, the Englishman was unable to make an aggressive move stick. The safety car, which had been brought out for the crack between Enric Bernatoli and Mark Hines, who on lap 31, Hines had been performing well in a first ever Formula 3000 race, and we spoke to Mark a couple of times last year in British Formula 3 races, and his first race around the daunting Monaco streets to boot. He had climbed from starting position 20th, which is a feat in itself, to be up into 13th when the uneven surface got the better of him and he spun into the barriers at Portier. Now, jumping ahead, because both Nordic drivers, McGarrity and Wilson, hounded the cars in front, those of Webber and Montagne, respectively, then showed no signs of settling for their positions because of the end of the race was approaching. Wilson, for his part, could not afford to relax because attached to his tail was the Astro Mega car of Ferdinand Alonso. Impatient to take his first Formula 3000 points, and perhaps buoyed by his promotion to Minardi's Formula 1 test driver, Alonso had set fastest laps earlier in the race and was clearly on the edge, as a couple of near sprints had paid testament to. Just as looked like positions would remain, Webber crashed heavily. The Australian had driven a storming first half of the race, and in fact, speaking to Ann Neal, that has been pretty much most of the talk of the Formula 3000 race, was on Webber's storming run up through the field, and was never more than half a second behind Bernasoli in the battle for fourth. When Bernasoli crashed, Webber moved up, but in his tussle with the Brazilian, his car had come to look extremely wayward. He had started to slip back on the clutches, and following the pack around by lap 28, a couple of tours later, straightened a chicane after outbraking himself, and wrote off the Formula 3000 car. He walked away from it and is in good health, I've been assured. So, as Junquera took the lead, he leads also the championships, 20 points over Minasassin, The top six are Junquilla, Davies, Salins, McGarity, Manassassi, and Montagani, who round out that race. And it looks like the point standings, McGarity passed the Lola to take fourth spot, whilst Melsoni took out fifth and remains ahead of Webber in the point standings. Had Webber finished fourth, the two would have occupied equal second position in the Formula 3000 Championship. Take it away, Colin.
Yeah, and last weekend we were actually looking at the Super Touring, first round of Super Tours at Oran Park. Now, sure enough, part of the problem they had there last weekend was that the timing system at Oran Park crashed in a major way. But to recap over on that one of the interesting points from last weekend is the fact that we had Paul Morris winning all three races. David Auger in the Alfa Romeo 155 finished second overall. Peter Hills finished third overall for the weekend, and Alan Gurr, the young newcomer, he finished fourth overall for the weekend. His actual best finish was third in race two. Now, Alan Gurr is a young carter who has been picked up by Peter Hills, and we look forward to him doing some better things as he gets used to the car. He'd actually overdriven a couple of races before, two Formula Ford races and one race in the Daewoo Challenge.
Joining us on the line as he makes his way back from Coffs Harbour is Ben Beasley. And Ben Beasley, it was another interesting day in the office for both Possenborn and Neil Bates, and good to see in the Australian Rally Championship that two winners from the two different stages in the weekend.
Yeah, we're actually coming back from Caloundra, not Coffs Harbour just yet, but that's all right. It was Rally Queensland this weekend. Yeah, it was great to see Neil Bates win yesterday. Certainly silenced a whole heap of critics who thought Possum Bourne was just going to run away with this year's championship. It was fair to say that Possum won pretty decisively in the first round over in WA. But the Subaru is obviously a good car in really, really slippery conditions. But the harder and dry roads here in Queensland suited Neil's car, and he was quite literally awesome yesterday. Today, Possum came back at him. But, I mean, it's good things for the championship in saying that it's going to be so close this year again.
Mm. Both cars did have some minor problems. Bourne's coming to a rear differential problem on Saturday, whilst Bates had handling problems in the Corolla on the opening stages on today.
Yeah. Possum just didn't think his car was feeling any good, and he thought that the problem was in the front. And so they were chasing around the front all day. I actually had a look in the rear, and that's where the problem was there. So they solved that overnight. And then today, Neil thinks the second stage of the day, he hit something and bent a lower control arm. So he was down by around 9 seconds after three stages. So he chose to have a big go in the next three, and he had a big go and had a couple of spins. So that sort of solved, brought the result that we saw today, where Possum winning by just over 20 seconds, I think it was, in the end.
Yeah. Cody Croker, though, no stranger to victory, and clean sweep, the group ends once again.
If anybody saw him in WA or in Canberra, they know that Cody has come a heck of a long way, and he showed it once again this weekend. He was so fast and so much quicker than Ed Ordinski, who's recognised as, you know, the master of the production car section. This guy is now a star. He's really shown the ability that Subaru put into him 2 years ago by putting him in the second factory car for Subaru, and he's now doing the job, and it'll be very interesting when he goes to Australia and Rally New Zealand to see what sort of pace he has against, you know, the guys who regularly compete on the world stage.
Well, I want to know is how soon till he gets a Group A car. Bourne could be looking at his form in Group N and going, gee, I might have to keep him back a little while longer.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'd be great to see him in that car. You know, maybe that opportunity, and at least having a test or doing something like that, isn't too far away. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the best production car Subaru in the world. The speed out of it is just awesome. And when you hear people like Ed Ordinski especially saying he can't catch the car, it says a lot about how good it is, but it also says a lot about how good Cody is. I mean, he's doing the job behind the wheel as well. And, you know, you'd have to now say he's a big chance for maybe moving onto a better car than that again. But who knows? I think Subaru are quite happy with the 1-2 punch they got at the moment with Possum in the outright car and Cody in the production car.
Yeah. As you mentioned, as I mentioned, I thought you were back from Coffs Harbour. That's because I've read press releases backwards. Of course, Coffs Harbour is the next round.
Yeah, that's right. It's the 1st and 2nd of July, so we welcome in the GST with the Rally New South Wales in Coffs Harbour. They had to change their name to do a different business set up so that they didn't get so they could still qualify for some savings with the GST. So it's now the Rally New South Wales up there.
Okay.
But a similar event to this in terms of the roads are kind of the same in terms of the makeup of them. They're basically a hard clay base, but very twisty, and Possum openly admits that it's his favourite event in the whole championship. So to have that at the halfway mark, and if Neil can beat him there, we're really saying how much Neil's having to go. And, he's now saying that he's coming closer to trees and closer to spins than he ever has before, and that really shows you that they're having a red-hot go.
Mm.
On some of the stages today, they were going... It's not unusual to see them go quicker second time over stages, but... they were beating stage records yesterday, and then they were beating those times again by up to 24 seconds today. So it shows how much quicker they're going.
Yeah, an unbelievable event. All in all, Formula 2, I don't have those results there.
Yeah, we believe Formula 2 was won by Lee Peterson and Nissan. Formula 2 is a little bit down this year, admittedly, without the Volkswagen teams and the Daihatsu teams of the past, and even Brett Middleton going across to a WRX Subaru from Honda. But, I mean, there's still some guys out there showing their wares. The other good thing is the Proton Challenge Cup, where Ashley James once again took that out, a young Victorian guy who won in Canberra, the inaugural round of that. That's pretty much the focus on the two-wheel drive cars at the moment, the one-make series. There's some guys running around in one guy's running Rick Bates' old car that was so successful a couple of years ago. So there's still some good cars out there, but just probably not as strong as what it's been in the past.
Mm. All right, then now, just in recapping, Bates and Bourne sharing the point, but Bourne still leading the championship at proper.
Yeah, that's right. That was to do with his win in WA. But also at the end of the year, they do 5 events, which counts for 10 heats. You have a rally on the Saturday and a rally on the Sunday, and your top 8 results from the year count. So it's very much still up in the air, and it'll come down to the final round, I still believe, down in Tasmania, the Saxon Safari, which is worth bonus points again. So you can't afford to have any slip-ups in this championship, otherwise your major opposition will come and hurt you pretty quickly.
All right, now I'm going to say correct me,
yep,
rather than correct me when I'm wrong, because I know I'm going to be wrong, but Rally of Canberra and also Rally Australia make up the Manufacturers' Championship, where this has come, where the 5 rounds we're talking about now make up the Drivers' Championship.
That's correct. It's basically like the touring cars. When they used to go to Bathurst and places like Sandown, they weren't part of the whole Drivers' Championship, whereas now they are. But in this series, Rally of Canberra and Rally Australia are not part of the Drivers' Championship. They're just manufacturers. But also the Super Series counts for manufacturers' points as well. So every rally is important to the manufacturers. And then when you have two international rallies as well that everyone wants to be involved with, which is Canberra and Rally Australia, it's still a very good series.
Mm, and I know Subaru is out in front of that, but then second and third place in the manufacturer's title is a bit surprising, because I think Mitsubishi was actually higher than Toyota going into it.
That's correct, yeah, and actually third coming into this round was Daihatsu. So it shows that, and that's pretty indicative of when you come to a rally and see how many cars and what everybody's driving. A lot of WRXs, lots of Mitsubishi Evolution Lancers, and then in the small cars, lots of Daihatsus. There's a few in terms of Toyota. Neil Bates is right out there in the front, but Toyota doesn't have a production class car, so that sort of explains why they are a little bit behind in the manufacturer's points.
Yeah, they aren't able to rack up
those. They do well in Rally
points.
Australia and places like that. That all comes back pretty quick.
All right then, Ben, I appreciate your time. Of course, next Sunday on Channel 10, we will be watching the GMC 400, which we look forward to seeing you hopefully back in town for that one. And then the following Sunday, we will see segment 2 or leg 2 of the Rally of Queensland. Of course, at 12 or is it 1?
One.
One.
You reminded me about that event next week.
You don't have to stress as much this week getting the package together.
Yeah. No, so we'll be right with that one, but we'll do it anyway.
All right, then. Well, Ben, we look forward to seeing you back in Canberra for the GMC 400 next weekend. And also, congratulations to Bates and Bourne. They're winners of the Rally of Queensland. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Thank you, Craig.
Do you think Speedway's all finished up for the year and then you walk into the office and get this one? The new series of World Series Sprint Cars is going to be an unbelievable season, in fact, with new television coverage and a new start to the way the World Series runs. John Hughes joins us on the line. And John, fantastic news. After so many years, we're now not only going to see telecasts of the events, but live television coverage from the World Series Sprint Cars next season.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. This year, four World Series rounds, two from, one from Newcastle, and three from Parramatta City Raceway are going to be televised live by C7 on Optus Television, which and Austar, which is really a unique situation for Australian Speedway. I think the first live telecast was from PCR last year for the Cat 50,000, and this is just building on that, and it's just great news for sprint car racing.
Yeah, it is indeed, and when you look at the season this year, it sort of it works itself in a nice circle. It starts at Newcastle and Parramatta on November 11th and 18th, and then it finishes at Newcastle and Parramatta in January 2001 on Wednesday the 17th and Saturday the 20th. So it does bundle everything together, and as we said, the start and finish, both live television coverage on C7.
Yeah, it's great. Starting on the East Coast is I guess, good for some of the teams, but not so good for others. It certainly makes a long drive from the second round of the series at Parramatta right across the other side of the country to Kalgoorlie for the third round. But, you know, it was considered that the benefits to sprint car racing and speedway in general of the live television coverage outweighed all of the other considerations. So we're just very pleased to have that sort of support from a television network and have that coverage build on the excellent coverage that already exists on SBS's Speed Week program and Foxtel.
The other thing you've been battling for some years now to get a major sponsor of the World Series Sprint Cars, this has to be a huge benefit towards what you're going to be doing in the off-season towards getting a naming rights sponsor.
Craig, television just opens so many doors. It's something that you just have to have in sport these days. You're never going to reach the audiences that major sponsors require without it. It's something that this sport has sort of been... hasn't enjoyed a lot of in the past, but things certainly, all the indicators are that things are changing. We're positioned very well to take advantage of it, and hopefully it'll open new doors for Speedway in the future. It'll invite and attract sponsors into the sport, which is what the sport so very much needs for its future development.
Now, the other thing, I don't know whether you caught this last night, so I'll mention it to you whilst you're listening in case you want to talk about it, but the World of Outlaws heading off to Eldora Speedway in Ohio, and the A feature won by Mark Kinzer, his brother Steve coming in second, Shepherd in third, Dale Blaney in fourth, and Jack Hortonchild in fifth place. Great news there, after having to go through the B main, Brooke Tatnall has got himself into 21st position. And in fact, in the point standings, Steve Kinzer leading on 3,666 points. Behind him, Mark Kinzer, Steve Smith, Sammy Swindell, Danny Lasowski, Dave Blaney. And then back there towards about the 17th or 18th position, in fact, only four behind Donnie Schott is Brooke Tatnall. So great news. He's in fact two positions ahead of people like Randy Hannigan and one position behind Greg Hognett, all have spent time here in Australia.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that's the toughest sprint car racing in the whole world, the World of Outlaws, and what Brooke Tatnall's doing over there is to be commended. It's a tremendous effort, so difficult, not only from the competition point of view, but the number of races those guys do, the number of miles they travel, how's they work. It's the sort of stuff that Brooke, it's not new to Brooke, he's done it all before in Australia, but it's just so much bigger and longer and harder, and it's a credit to him that he's out there giving it a go.
Well, John, congratulations on the great news. As I said at the top, it's not really speedway season, but when you get news like that, you want to tell everyone about it as soon as possible, because I guess the pressure's on places now that don't get C7. Sprint car fans will be definitely wanting to get their providers to get them C7 so they can catch that if they can't make it to the track.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. We look forward to next summer.
We do indeed. John Hughes, thanks very much for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport.
Yes, and of course, the big news for us here in Canberra next weekend is the GMC 400, when the V8 Supercars, GDP Nations Cup, the GDP, Formula Holdens and the historic touring cars will hit the circuits, the new circuits here in Canberra for the first time. But of course, that's not all that's taking place during the week. We've got a bit of build-up on Wednesday, the 7th of June, in Wednesday morning, starting around about 10:30 a.m., there's the GMC 400 Pantech Parade, which will take place through Canberra to the circuit, and there'll be a parade of all the various race transports, etc., being led by Avesco's 25-metre B-double transporter. On the Thursday afternoon, between 4 and 6 p.m., there's a GMC 400 barbecue with the stars at Civic Square in London Circuit in the city, with the action starting on Friday morning at 8:50 a.m. with the Jetty Production Car Practice 1, with the V8 Supercars heading out on the track at 9:30 a.m. for their first practice session. They also have a practice session on the Friday afternoon at 12:15 a.m. and at 2:30 p.m. they have qualifying for top 50% and at 3 p.m. qualifying for the bottom 50%. On the Saturday, the V8 Supercars have their warm-up at 9:20 a.m. With their first event being at 11 a.m, the top 15 shootout, and a race that afternoon at 3:30 p.m. Race 1, and with an autograph session in the merchandise area at 1:30 p.m. But on that day, I've actually got a couple of races for GDP Production Cars, a VB Challenge, and a GDP Nations Cup and Formula Holden Race 1, and Historic Touring Car Race 1 on the Saturday. On the Sunday, action starts at 8:55 a.m. with the Historic Touring Car Race 2. 9:35 a.m. the V8 Supercars have their warm-up. GDP Nations Cup have their first race for Sunday at 10:10 a.m. 11:05 is the race 2 for the V8 Supercars, which is the reverse grid 25-lapper. In the afternoon, 12:05 GD Production Car Race, 12:35 the VB Challenge, 1:05 Formula Holden, 1:45 GDP Nations Club, and at 2:45 p.m. the V8 Supercars Race 3, the 50-lapper feature event, which concludes a compulsory pit stop. In my set, there'll be stunt shows, precision driving, an air show, a parade lap, and the national anthem. So it's going to be busy over the next weekend.
It is. And we should make mention of the fact that on your way home from the GMC 400, join Triple SFM from 5 o'clock. Now, that's right, an early opener here on Triple SFM next weekend. 5 o'clock, we will be going live for 2 hours to give you all the summation and, well, revelations of the eventual GMC 400. And we certainly hope that you will remember that jump in your car. It's going to finish at 5, you can guarantee that, because Channel 10 has to have their news then.
Yes, it's going to finish by then. The actual podium presentation is 4:05, but by the time you sort of get out of the car park, get out of the racetrack, get to your car and get going, and if you're heading back out of Canberra, it'll be 5 o'clock easily. We've got a few other things we've got up our sleeve for next week, hopefully, for the show. We've got a few things we've found out about, which
in
we
fact,
might try
in fact, sprint cars from Parramatta
yep.
are happening. A big Queen's Birthday sprint car trial. We'll also be previewing the Le Mans 24-hour race. There is a lot
the latest
on.
Rally British Touring Cars from Silverstone. And the lead up to the World Rally Championship round, the Acropolis Rally. So it's certainly more than just the V8s and everybody else from next weekend. There's a lot of stuff going on, but of course, that'll be the main game. So we'll see you then.
Hold on. We're going to try something which could fail miserably on us. We haven't done it for quite some time now, so we're not going to wrap up now. We're going to go to, if you're joining us now, to hear Tuddy on the AFL and Esso, here's what you've missed.
calorific.
Well, we tried it, it failed, but these things happen. Anyway, don't forget, from 5 o'clock next week on Inside Motorsport, for all the motorsport action here, Triple S FM is the place to be. The GMC 400 on Triple S. Colin, thanks for being with us. We will start the carts and get you into the AFL action right now. And...
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
If you know someone who'd like to improve their reading and writing,
brings himself and Rick Gallus back into the winner's circle, and it was in fact the third time in this season in the Northern Lights Indy Racing Series that a car has won the championship, or has won the race from beyond 20th starting position. Now, rumours coming out throughout the week have suggested that the win was orchestrated by Tony George. If anyone had watched the race, I'm sure they would disagree quite strongly with that summation, because Unser just brought it back from a lap down to win it, and it was quite a spectacular race. So congratulations to Alan Zer Jr., who's picked up some great momentum as he is heading towards the Indianapolis 500. The GMC 400 is coming much, much closer now. And in Canberra, the construction is starting to begin. The scaffolding for the culprit facilities are now being undertaken. Further work to install 8 kilometres of concrete safety barriers, including security fencing, grandstands and the over-track pedestrian bridges, will be rolled out between now and the start of the event on June 9. The concrete barriers installation starts tomorrow on the 1st of May, and then we will see the track starting to take its full shape. One of the more experienced co-drivers that will be in the field is a chap called Derek Ringer. He was Colin McRae's co-driver up until 1996, and this year he is running beside Katsu Taguchi, who is the champion of the Asia Pacific Series. Firstly, Derek, how does a Scotsman get linked up with a Japanese driver?
Well, actually, a phone call from another Scotsman, Andrew Cowan, team manager or boss of Rally Art Europe, who runs the Mitsubishi team in the World Championship, gave me a call about 4 or 5 weeks ago to see if I could fit this in. And since I'm not doing so much over in Europe, I jumped to the opportunity.
Scotland is an amazing place, a bit like Australia, except damn sight smaller and colder. But one thing like Australia is you're able to breed so many great racing drivers in all divisions. What do you think is in the water up there?
Whiskey, usually.
But it is an amazing, it's amazing how many world champions and just world-class drivers that Scotland has produced.
Well, I think we've been very fortunate in that. We're not too good at most other sports, but sometimes we hit it lucky. But it's obviously... it's easier in a way being in Europe to make your way in motorsport, I think, than for people here in Australasia. And generally, the people that have managed to come out of Australasia into any form of motorsport have done very well, but to make the jump is particularly difficult.
Now, you being a co-driver have a lot of different responsibilities, and in some way, you're the unseen heroes behind the people like Colin McRae and Taguchi, because the amount of work that you have to put in basically is hours and hours on top of what the actual driver puts in, because really, after you've done the wrecking and you've decided what you're going to do, his job is only to steer and point, Whereas your job is to actually write everything up, do a bit more study on everything else. Just how many hours would you put into getting yourself ready, getting your Facebook ready, and then just preparing generally for the whole event?